Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. Hosted by Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Now listen up. It's time to crush the curse.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and I'm heading down to New Zealand to my buddy, Dr. Brian Kelly, who has been in practice, has been president of two different schools and helped them kind of come out of the doldrums. And now he's helping other chiropractors and has a seminar series that he's running. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Brian to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
G'day, Don. Great to be with you today.
This is awesome. I love technology because now I can reach out to all my friends all over the different parts of the world. So it's good to talk to you, sir.
And by the way, this Zoom platform is yards ahead of some of the other ones. So
I know. That's why I always use it, because it's, I know we use Skype before and then it cuts in and out all the time, and we seem to have some good luck with Zoom. So amen to Zoom. So like we like to start off in all the interviews is I like to just kind of get a good idea of why did you even become a chiropractor? How did this journey for you start?
Well, I was very blessed. My uncle became a chiropractor in 1973. So I guess I was a late bloomer. My first adjustment was age 7. And but I'd had a series of tonsillitis and antibiotics and that whole routine, and knew what it was like to feel sick, you know, with your inflammation and headaches and just fever and just in bed for days. And we started having chiropractic, and his message was always the same. Your body will do better when you get adjusted. It was never, I'm going to make you better. And, you know, and the same happened when I was 11 and 12, went through a series of migraines, really bad migraines. His message was the same. And so I'm like, we grew up with chiropractic care, my brothers and sister. And it was just the coolest thing. And we'd go down to his house on, have, you know, sort of Friday night family dinners once every 6 weeks or so. And he'd always tell these stories. And he'd say, you know, I had a lady in the other day in the practice, and of course, you know what the stories were like. And some of them were really bizarre. Like, you know, a woman came in the other day and she used to tell me she used to wear glasses to watch TV and now she doesn't. I'm like, whoa.
That's good.
So I grew up with chiropractic care, and at age 15, I thought I'd be either a politician, a social worker, or a chiropractor. And there weren't too many 15-year-old politicians. I figured social work really dealt with the effects. And, right. You know, they're really doing great work, but it was really the ambulance down in the valley. And chiropractors seemed to deal with the cause. And I looked at my uncle's life, and he just had the coolest life. And I'm like, I could have a cool life and help people and be part of, you know, dealing with the cause of a problem, not, you know, dealing with the effects. So that's how I got into it and studied in Australia and then practiced there for 11 years.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about school, because, you know, it sounds like you already had the philosophy down. You kind of understood the bigger picture of what chiropractic is, and how was school? Cause you went to school in Melbourne, was it?
Yeah. And so I've been involved in education sort of, it was never my design or a goal, but it sort of ended up on a board of a school and then ended up the president. But what's fascinating is, and this is really a reality check, and you'd be aware of this, the gap between a chiropractic education and practice is like
huge,
ginormous. It's like, you know, and so the tragedy is people go and they pay their money and they have an education. And then what the reality of practice is nothing like it. And, you know, all right. Those contraindications, let's be honest, they're bullshit. They are bullshit. You know, all the reasons not to take care of someone, and the reality in practice is, you know, sure, you want to be careful and you want to, you know, people need the appropriate care if there's a medical situation or whatever it is. But the reality is, as a chiropractor, the question is, what can I do to help you? You know, what can I do to help you? And that's not really sort of part of the educational model.
Well, and I think, too, if it comes from the mindset of, you know, we're treating conditions and then typically those conditions would be gone, that's probably why that would be more in that mindset rather than we're just optimizing function and whatever you do is just better under chiropractic care. That's not kind of the premise of school.
Well, that's exactly right. Or people get into this BS of, well, there's no conditions in the literature. And, you know, that never ends. Otherwise, chiropractic, in fact, would never have started.
Right.
So, But our education was good. We had a great group of people. You know, the professors in Melbourne were good. And since that time, you know, the colleges in Australia have really drifted really towards a physiotherapy reductionistic mechanistic model. And that's a sad thing. And it plays out in the grad, it plays out in the profession. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that is where it is. And hopefully it'll, the pendulum will swing back.
Now, I think, and this, if I get me right, even in school, you loved leadership. So did you start organizing any speakers coming in back when you're in school?
Yeah, it's not that I love leadership. I just saw the opportunity or the challenge. And so we did set up a seminar series, and I sort of fell into that. And so we'd bring in speakers from the outside into the college. And, I guess that was one of the first things I did. Yeah.
That's cool. And what were some of the first speakers you brought in? Just curious.
Well, some weren't allowed to come in.
Okay.
Thing, so we'd be offsite. In fact, now the college in Melbourne, they've banned all chiropractic speakers who are not sort of vetted. And I've been banned from my own institution, which was kind of interesting a year or so ago, because I actually went there to make a donation. So it's just really gone bizarre, but that's when you live in the model of fear. But we had some amazing people back then. It was, so this is like the 80s, late 1980s. And we had people like Guy Reekman, I remember, came in.
Yeah.
And we brought in Reggie Gold. And some local speakers from around Australia who were just outstanding. One of my mentors in chiropractic from Melbourne, a guy called Don Cannon, who I saw recently at a conference in Australia. And we just sort of made it happen once a month. And then we organized seminar deals where if there was a seminar on in town, students could get a, you know, group discount, or, you know, we'd have 50 or 100 students turn up and they looked after us. So I remember we organized a big crew to go and hear Larry Markson, and he was on top of his game. It was, you know, just some amazing things.
That's cool.
And so that helped shape your education, because you really weren't going to get the full package, you know, at college, as we know.
Yeah, totally. And I know, like, just listening to other chiropractors doing this podcast too, it seems like most of them did exactly that, where they either went to a lot of seminars or they just surrounded themselves with a lot of like philosophical or on fire chiropractors to kind of keep them motivated and the top of their game through the school. Cause I know I have a few people who reach out to me cause they're in school right now, and they're looking for that motivation and that philosophy. So I think that's good advice for them too, is that bring them. Cause a lot of people love to talk to students, right? Chiropractors love the students.
They love to talk. Well, the other one was, there was a seminar set up in Australia which ran for 25 years. I'm not sure whether you and Brandy came down to it. It was called Dynamic Growth, or DG.
Yeah.
And people basically just got up and told practice stories and, you know, things that were happening in practice. And one of the groups of people were really senior statespeople, you know, who'd been in practice, seemed like a long time when we were students, but 40 plus years, which, you know, 45 years. And they were telling these stories about what happened in practice and people they saw, and they got better from these weird and wonderful things. And, you know, finally you got into practice and you started seeing people, and someone would come in and you'd have no freaking idea what was going on, or it was a really serious condition. And what came through your mind was one of these old timers saying they'd seen someone and taken care of someone with that. It's like, well, hang on a sec, if it can work for them, maybe chiropractic with my hands, you know, can work for the person in front of me. But that really, really shaped what was possible by hearing from people who've been doing it for decades and decades, you know, what was possible when they put their hand on someone.
So it's almost, you can borrow some uncertainty temporarily until you're in practice long enough to get your own.
I love that. That'd be a new t-shirt. Yeah, you can't say, well, I've seen, you know, people with this, but you can say in chiropractic, people have been helped with that. You can say that with absolute certainty. And, you know, if it works for someone else, can surely work for you.
That's awesome. Now, when you graduated, did you just open a practice right on your own, or did you associate, or how did your career start?
Yeah, I remember doing, I covered a guy's clinic actually for a few weeks, and he was a sports chiropractor. Mm-hmm. He was off actually at a professional golf tournament. And I remember that at the time there was the Australian Tennis Open was on, and we got a call in the morning at 9:30 or something, or 10 o'clock. And it was the manager of the number one women's tennis player in the world, Monica Sellers, and she hurt her neck, and so she called this practice because this was the go-to guy. And she said, oh, you know, the manager said, you know, Monica's in town, she's been in practicing for the Australian Tennis Open 2 weeks, she's hurt her neck, she's been seeing the physiotherapist, her neck's worse, and you know, can she see the sports chiropractor? So the CA came and got me, and you know, him, I drive my sort of student car, and I said, what's going on? And so anyway, I said, yep, sure, we can see her at 12:30 in the practice, and it was a little bit out of town. And the guy said, it's Monica Sellers, the number one tennis player in the world. Can you come to the, you know, Como five-star hotel? We'll give you security clearance. And I realized at that moment, sort of with an hour and a half experience, that I could probably sort of hand the gig to someone else. And I did. So I got someone else to go and see it. Oh, and yeah. Now, of course, you'd take care of anyone. But that was a funny story, like an hour and a half into practice. But
yeah, that gets the test your certainty right off the bat. You're like, bang. So what did you do after that? So you just covered him for a bit, and then did you open your own practice?
Yeah, so what I realized was I felt covering someone's practice. I did two of those. It was sort of like babysitting. And so, you know, the garden was half grown or was grown with weeds or was, you know, whatever, fully grown sort of metaphorically. And I'm like, and it was that other person's educational model. So I sort of got frustrated. So I bought a little practice and we, you know, we ran that and built that over the next sort of 11 years. And it was very, very fulfilling. In fact, I remember my last year of full-time practice in 2002, we spent $72,000 on training and development. And that wasn't a great investment because I left the next year. But but my point was we always invest. We wanted to have a great practice experience. We wanted to, you know, be at the top of our game. We figured if we're going to do this, we're going to do it at 100%. And so we jumped in and it was a busy practice, but it was a very effective practice. Lots of people became chiropractors and, you know, they'd travel from other parts of the country to see us. And yeah, we had a lot of fun too.
That's awesome. And now when you grew, were the laws as restrictive as they are now in Australia? How did you grow your practice in the first place? Did you go do screenings or did you just do talks or how did you do that?
Yeah, you know, the number one thing we did was we sat down and wrote a vision statement, and it took us, well, it changed by two words in 11 years. It was several paragraphs, but it took 6 months to write. And, you know, week one, we saw seven patients total. So it was a very sort of small, basically buying the Yellow Pages ad back then.
Yeah.
But it didn't take long to grow. And you know, when you're on fire, you do whatever it takes. And so we just went out and worked and, you know, met people. And but we did a spinal screening. We checked, I think, 173 people in a day. I remember that number because they filled out a little form. And I think either no one or one person came in. So we're like, okay, well, that's it. So we studied off a guy in Sydney, a guy called Anthony Tremaine. And he was the world master of meeting people in a public environment or, you know, spinal screening and identifying a problem, booking them in, and, you know, they'd come into your practice. So we studied with him, and we got pretty good at this. So, you know, we did a lot of spinal screenings, and it was very sort of humbling because you'd meet people who would probably never walk through your door.
100%.
Many of them had had spinal surgery and they were lost. And then you met sort of, you know, sort of regular people. And so that was the main reason we got a large number of new patients. And the second one was we were very committed to education. So we had a series of four education classes and we got pretty good at communicating the message.
That's great. And during those first few years in practice, were you still regularly, well, obviously you said you spent $72,000 on the last year in education, but were you always going to seminars on a regular basis?
Yeah, we'd go to a lot. And then there was that old sort of in the early years, like, can we afford to go? And it was like, oh, we couldn't afford to go, but we couldn't afford not to go. So you just find the money, and particularly if you had to travel. But as we got into it, we hired coaches. And I think for most of that time, maybe 8 of the 11 years, we had 3 different coaches that we work with. And that made a difference too, in terms of accountability, someone seeing your potential, helping you set goals and pushing you towards them, and then fine-tuning some stuff, which you just, you know, you'd had no idea about. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were in practice, did you ever get to a point where things kind of blew up on you and then you stopped looking after yourself, or you kind of got a little bit burnt out? Did you ever get that?
Yeah, I know that's pretty common. That didn't happen so much, probably because we structured from early on the practice hours. So practice days were 3.5 days a week with an extended lunch break. So I think practice hours are 27 hours a week, but we probably spent 30 plus on the practice. But there was sort of prep time, play time, and game time. And so because we balanced that out, yeah, I don't know that I hit a wall. We hit plateaus, of course.
Plateaus,
and that was a time to reset or do something different or fire a CA or, you know, whatever it might be. So, yeah, but I don't – in practice, I don't recall hitting – Hitting the wall.
No, that's good. And so tell me, how do you switch from being a chiropractor in a busy practice and then all of a sudden becoming a president of a school when you went to New Zealand? How did that whole thing start?
Yeah, it was sort of by accident, never on my goal list, but I got invited, myself and another chiropractor, Mark Postles, we were practicing in Australia, but we were New Zealanders, and we got invited to sit on the board of the New Zealand College of Chiropractic. And, you know, they had an immense vision, you know, and they'd mapped it out over 30 years, that if they had the right number of chiropractors and they were well-trained and great communicators, you know, and good citizens or good people, that within 3 decades, you could really move the needle in a nation. And so the vision was incredible. My brother Simon, and my cousin David were in the inaugural graduating class. So we sat on the board, and, you know, a lot of chiropractors sit on boards or chiropractic school boards. We knew nothing about governance, but we sort of bumbled our way through that. And then the president left, and I remember saying, you know, how hard could it be to train a chiropractor? Because we'd meet these people who would come out of school and, you know, seemingly missing some of the big rocks, you know, missing the big pieces.
Yeah.
So, I came home and I said, oh, I'm going to apply for this position. I don't think anyone else applied, but I applied for the position, got it. And, you know, I counseled a lot of people. I remember talking to some other college presidents at the time, and they all said, don't do it. No, they just gave good counsel about it. And I jumped into that. I had no idea, but we just hired good people. You know, the vision of the school was crystal clear. So metaphorically for your practice, know why you're doing it. We hired really good people that we could afford, either as consultants or as academics or administrators. We had a pretty good strategy, and then we went to work, and we worked our tail off, and we traveled, and we came up to your place, and we did talks in your office, and we had 2 people or 10 people.
Yes.
I've met some of them now. They've graduated.
I know. They were in those talks.
They were there. And so I guess, yeah, one of the things that's been effective for me is just working hard. And, you know, I read books like, you know, The 4-Hour Work Week, and that's all kind of fun and good, but I don't know how rewarding it is, you know, working half a day a week, because if you're here to do something on planet Earth and you love it, then you really want to do it.
Right.
So I started, you know, I did an MBA along the way, but that was sort of towards the end of the 8 years at New Zealand. But we had good counsel. In fact, at the time back then, we had some of the presidents of some of the US colleges on the board of the New Zealand school. They were like my bosses.
Cool.
There was Jerry Hardy from Sherman, and there was president at the time, and there was Carl Cleveland, and there was a president from Palmer, although they drifted away, they didn't like our vision, but and Guy Riegman was instrumental, and Carl Cleveland, and so they were my counsel, apart from some good friends who were chiropractors on the board.
That's cool. And so what were some of the biggest challenges going from being a practicing chiropractor to a president of a school?
Well, number one physically was, I mean, as a chiropractor, you're moving your body. And you're upright. And I went and sort of sat 60 hours a week. And within 6 months, I looked a lot older. You know, that was kind of a thing. The other one was the travel, because, you know, to meet and greet people and recruit students and fundraise, it took a lot of time on the road. So, but it was very inspiring working with young people and bright minds and people who wanted to, you know, make a difference in the world. But I think that the main thing was time. You know, as a chiropractor, you might be in the game 25 or 40 hours a week. And this was sort of 60 to 70 and all consuming. So it had a major effect on my family dynamics. And it was tough, but it was a calling, and I loved every minute of it. And there were some massive challenges and sort of curveballs and skeletons in the closet. And you'd face those and you'd work them out and navigate your way through them. And now I look at the New Zealand school and it's flying, you know, it's on the world stage, and their research department is second to none.
Yeah.
I remember hiring Heidi. We talked her into leaving practice so she could finish her PhD full time, and now the work her and Kelly are doing is, you know, it's second to none. So,
Well, and it's funny too, because we just had on one of my last interviews, we did Sheridan Kay, and she talked about how she wanted to buy your practice when you were going to be the president, and you wouldn't let her because you said, come to the school. And then you got her hired there as well to teach Thompson. So that was pretty cool.
Well, that was cool. But I think the second part of the story was, from memory, her husband, Dave, didn't get into Australian school. So that was a double reason to go screw it. So they moved across. And they're good friends of mine, and she's been teaching the technique, and just amazing. So it's funny how you think you have a roadmap, but someone else has got a, you know.
Right. And it's like figuring it out along the way, right? It's kind of like, we got to be like a healthy nervous system, being able to adapt to an ever-changing environment.
Being able to adapt, whatever the curveball is.
Yes. Now, so tell me a little bit about the transition. So you went to New Zealand, got New Zealand rocking, and then you had, how did the whole thing with Life West come around?
Yeah, so I did that for 8 years, and that was probably about time, you know, because it was sort of a decision point of which way the school would go. So in that last year, I met someone in Europe, and they sort of said, oh, would you be interested in, you know, coming and joining Life West? And I went, oh, not really. And they said, Jerry Klum's retiring. And then he called me. Jerry called me and he said, you know, I've been here 30 years and it's probably time to move on. And, you know, he was one of my mentors and friends in chiropractic. When Jerry spoke, you know, you listen. So I went over and met the board chair, and then I came back later and had an interview. So it was, you know, it was time for him to move on. So I jumped into that and did that for 6 years, and then that finished. So I moved on. But we had a great time and met a lot of people, and we did some very innovative things, which haven't really been done in chiropractic before on campuses. And that was a blast. That was a lot of fun.
And tell me, because one of the things I love, because I was part of it too, was creating the wave. Like, that was really cool. That was your baby, right? To start. And did you tell everybody about the story about you should never do seminars in the summer? Just tell me how that whole thing came around.
The vision of it was, we wanted it to be a little bit different. And there were a lot of seminars that were sort of the same. And so for the first 3 years, we didn't want to repeat any chiropractic speakers. And that's not that easy to do because, you know, the best are the best. But we wanted to bring in other people outside chiropractic and with a similar philosophy about life. And the whole idea was to raise the vision or the thinking of chiropractors above the adjusting table. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, you know, the issue of, you know, sustainability in the world we live in is really important. And, you know, if you sort of follow that argument down, it doesn't matter how healthy someone's nerve system is. If we've expired the planet, there's going to be nowhere to live here, you know.
Exactly.
That's Elon Musk's view. You know, he says, well, let's build a home on Mars because if we screw it up here, we've got somewhere to go. So perhaps some people never got what that was about, but when they got there, they got it. For example, you know, we had a climate change scientist from Stanford.
Yeah.
It was amazing. We had a guy called Arne Gundersen, who was a nuclear radiation physicist, and he talked about, you know, the accident at Fukushima in Japan, its effect on the Pacific fish supply, and, you know, people like Aaron Brockovich. It's really interesting people, you know, who understand some of our, when we brought someone in, you know, we had an astronaut. In fact, he passed away. He didn't make it, but he was one of only 12 people to walk on the moon. And so it was really a fun, and, you know, we had, you know, some nice entertainment and different things. And so we wanted to be a little bit different. And I think we kind of got there by the third year. And you were there every year, actually. I remember you.
Yeah, it was.
Really supporting it. It was different. And then we had to choose a time of the year. And in my first year, we need to put energy in the system. And I think metaphorically for your practice or your life, if you need to move the needle, it's all about energy. So what, you know, and I remember ringing up these 30 speakers, and in fact, the first year they were all chiropractors. And I said, look, we really can't afford to pay you, and we can't even afford to fly here, and we can't even afford to put you up, and, you know, will you help us out? And they all said yes. I'm like, oh my God, that's so humbling. Really humbling. And so we had to choose a time of the year. We wanted to do it in that first calendar year. And, you know, July was sort of knocked out, of course, because it was, everyone's on vacation, but we did it early August, and I think 1,000 people turned up for the first one, and, you know, a few more after that, and then it grew, and so it was a lot of fun, and there are a lot of good stories.
There's a lot of good stuff, and you were playing music too. That was pretty cool. There, you had the band, and you got to play the trombone, right? That's your
We did that a little bit, and we always want to have a musical theme, and. You know, we had the talent show, and that was always a lot of fun. People come from all over the world, students. It was the student talent quest. And I remember that conductor we had, Ben Zanders. He was a knockout as a presenter.
Yeah.
2 million views on his TED talk. But he wrote the book, The Art of Possibility. And he was really there talking about human potential. A few people in the room who heard his talk, you know, that was speechless. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I remember he came to the talent quest. It was late night. He was flying back to New York the next day. And, you know, the week before he'd conducted the London Symphony. And here was this chiropractic student, you know, doing a thing she was an opera singer, actually.
Yeah.
And she sang her thing. And I said, I leaned over to this English guy, you know, this conductor. And I said, what did you think, Ben? And he sort of leans forward in a sort of English pompous accent. He says, not bad for a chiropractor. You know, she wasn't a professional, but she was certainly pretty good. So we sort of add the element of music because music is life, you know, and chiropractic.
Right. Right. And celebration too. I think that's the thing too. And I think that was the coolest part. Like you say, you talk about energy inputs. There's a lot of times in the summer, chiropractors use that as a downtime, and that kind of has a lower energy for your practice and your life. And if you go to something like that, that's just great to kind of get you kind of pumped back up again. So that was pretty cool. Do you have any highlight memory of your times at the Wave?
I think one of the funnest was we hired that impersonator
who
impersonated Barack Obama.
And yeah.
The way we built the story up was we put on
You
the
freaked us out. We thought it was totally real. It was crazy.
Well, some people sat in the... So here was he's an actor, right? In fact, he went to school with Martha Nessler and they were at the party the night before and she said, what are you doing here? Literally, they went to high school and, you know, decades gone by. And he says, oh, I'm just here doing some publicity for Erin Brockovich. And she didn't even pick that he was, you know, got on stage and did his thing. Anyway, I remember Irene Gold sat in the front row and you know, he did his 20-minute routine and we'd prepped him on, you know, the language of subluxation and spizzorink. I mean, he was hilarious. Yeah. And we had, you know, the lectern and we had guys dressed up as, you know, security.
And when you guys locked the doors, you're like, lock the doors. And it was like secret service. Yeah. Like, oh, it was crazy.
All that routine. Anyway, Irene Gold sat there for 20 minutes and nodded, you know, and she's one of my good friends and she's really sharp. And she said, I've never been in the, you know, heard the company of a president. And I remember two of my friends were chiropractors. After 2 minutes, they walked out and they said, oh, effing Kelly's gone too far. They said, you know, they're raving Republicans. They said, he's just gone too far. And they thought it was actually Obama. But it was fun, you know.
But you guys set it up so good. So like, it wasn't even like everyone was just second guessing as they go through it. But that was a pretty amazing thing too. So now tell us, what are you doing now?
Well, what's when I left Life West, I sort of need to decompress a bit. So I had 6 months off and I'd really highly recommend that for anybody. That was a gift, you know, being able just to sort of exercise a lot more, and I meditated every day and got more grounded because I'd traveled so much. You know, I think I spent more time in the air than on the ground. So it was really a good opportunity. And then I covered a few people's clinics and that was really interesting, both in Australia and New Zealand. And I realized that because I'd got a little disconnected from practice life, and I'd realized that the breadth of practice was, in terms of quality, went from really low quality to pretty good people doing a pretty good job, and then people really at the high end. And people still came in, you know, waited, had shitty service, shitty tables, paid good money for really poor quality adjustments, and they probably still got better.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, we need to do better than that. You know, we need to raise, you know, it's the same tide that raises all the boats, and we're only as good as the weakest link in the chain. And you know, there's lots of valid criticisms against chiropractic and most of the criticisms aren't valid, but we really need to raise the standard of practice. So, you know, I enjoyed covering these clinics and that was sort of fun. And then a woman phoned me up one day, she used to be one of my students back in New Zealand. She said, oh, look, I'm, you know, having some challenges in practice. Do you think you could help me? And I'd say, look, I don't know. And I said, you know, I won't charge you, but, you know, fly me to your city and I'll spend a day with you. And within 5 minutes, it was obvious what the problem was. And so I spent a day with him and I said, look, I think I can help you. And so I put a model together and then someone else reached out. And so I built a company called C1 for Success. And the things I learned that have helped me turn around organizations, build organizations, you know, build an effective clinic. And it's really simple. It's basically about mindset and strategy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go to a lot of things and they tell you what to do and how to do it. And that's awesome. But if your mind's still stuck in where it was stuck, it doesn't really matter what you do. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do now. I work with chiropractors. And then I needed a way of sort of getting the message out there. So I put together a one-day seminar called The Inner Game of Chiropractic. And so I nervously took it on the road and people turned up. And part of what we'd got to do was experiential. And it was, I wrote this meditation and hired a voiceover actor and bought the music. And it was a pre-shift meditation. So some chiropractic offices have a pre-shift huddle and it's mainly tactical and strategic. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, hey, you're looking a bit sad today, you know, hug and smile and that's all valid. Or, you know, you've got three new patients at the same time. How can we, and that's all good.
Yeah.
But I realized one of the missing links, you know, what did the masters do is they get really, really centered and they dial into the universe before their day begins. So I thought, well, what if you did that with chiropractors and CAs? Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, you know, the doctor who did that stuff.
Yeah.
So I wrote this thing and, you know, we did it in the seminar and I said, you know, try this. And so people started trying it in their practice and they'd come to the seminar on a Thursday or a Saturday or a Sunday and things changed in their practice like the next practice day and they didn't have time to do anything. So they didn't have time to market or, you know, go and do an advertising. And some of the changes are pretty wild. Like it moved the needle, you know, so I figured I'm onto something here. So yeah, that's the 1 day program. I've done it, I think, in 8 cities now. We did it in London and 7 or 8 cities in Australia. I'm going to come to the US later this year, but mindset and strategy is what it's about.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, and I'm doing a lot of work with Tony Robbins. He always says too, that it's about 70% mindset and about 30% strategy to kind of, you can have people running through the same procedures, but they're kind of like a hollow shell. But if they're on fire, right, it just like, or a Jim Rohn, I used to love, he used to say that words are like a pin. So if you throw a pin at someone, they feel them, but there's like a little prick. But he said, but if you have that emotion and state, you like tie a brick to the pin. Yeah. And then you knock them
off.
That's
the definition of a big prick.
That's hilarious. So just with all your travels around the world, what kind of things, and again, I know you probably said a little bit about what mindset, but what are some of the biggest challenges you see that chiropractors are having? And do you have any advice for those guys?
I think the first thing is choose the college you go to wisely. You know, there's some major problems in chiropractic education. And first of it's the cost. You know, the cost is just ridiculous relative to the return on investment. So that discrepancy is now ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The third problem in the educational model is they're not teaching chiropractic. You know, the whole board exams have nothing to do with the practice of chiropractic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very little to do with safety and competence. It's really a knowledge-based thing, but that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. We also know that the accrediting agencies have been hijacked by people. I couldn't say this before, but I know it because I've lived and breathed it in two different jurisdictions. They've been hijacked by people who have a personal philosophical agenda, and they've used that to hurt institutions. And you have to spend an enormous amount of time and resources teaching things which really have nothing to do with the practice of chiropractic. And then the other problem is the lack of, you know, vision from the leadership of institutions, whether it's the president or the board. So my first advice is choose the college you go to very, very, very wisely. That would be the first thing. The second theme, I guess, is a lack of self-belief or confidence either in themselves or in the potential of chiropractic. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're doing, where people can listen to people and go, oh, they sound a bit like me, and you know, they're about my age, or they, you know, they practice my technique. Yeah. But if someone else can do it, you can do it. Right. I mean, for what we talked about earlier with, you know, the art of delivering chiropractic. But yeah, fundamentally, people really don't believe their magnificence. They really don't believe what they've got inside them and what they could do if they got out of their own way or took off the handbrake or didn't care what anyone else thought. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think they would be the main ones, because there's enough people, resources, and technology available to get there.
Yeah.
You just got to want to get there and know where there is, and then believe you can do it. And, you know, I had the blessing of guest lecturing on about 8 different practice management programs in the States primarily. And they're all doing amazing things. You know, people like my friend Schofield is doing amazing things, and what he does works for a lot of people. And yeah, there's some incredible people doing incredible things. And so find your niche, find your tribe, jump in and be part of it. But I think in practice, it's easy to get isolated and, you know, particularly if you're in a rural area, but even people practice in cities where there might be hundreds of chiropractors and they're just not connected.
Right.
So you got to stay connected to the tribe and have mentors. And if people can't afford a coach, it's like there are people in your town, or you can pick up, I'm sure someone could pick up the phone and say, hey, Donna, can I ask you about something? And you're not going to say no, or I'll charge you for my time. You say, hey, I'm happy to, you know, so, but there are people around who could, you know, offer a helping hand, but they've got to believe they can do it and know where they want to go. And then the final thing is getting off your ass and doing the friggin' work. You know,
that's the hardest part sometimes.
Well, you meet young chiropractors. I say, how's practice? And they go, oh, okay. And there's that, you know, the forlorn little look. And I say, what's going on? They say, well, I'm not as busy as I'd like to be. And I go, oh, okay. How busy would you like to be? And they say this number. And I say, how busy are you? And they say, you know, I'm seeing, you know, a handful of people a week. I say, well, how much do you work? How often are you in the office? And they say, oh, about a day and a half a week. And it's like, yeah. And I say, how come? And they go, well, I want a lifestyle practice. And I look them in the eye and I say, you know what? Who's taking care of the people in your town or city when you're off doing whatever you're doing? I said, because they're sick and they're dying.
Yeah.
And they go, what? And I go, they're sick. Not necessarily with ailments, but they're sick because they're out of balance. And they're dying. Their spirit's dying and they're dying. Their soul's dying and they're, you know, and they may be dying from health conditions. But, you know, we've been given a gift, and I don't think people sometimes realize how big that gift is. And it's really a responsibility. And one of my goals in my life is to say, you know, by the end, have I made a difference in helping chiropractic grow and expand and be in a better shape than when it helped me as a 7-year-old, you know, with tonsillitis, which it did dramatically.
Right. So what do you do now to keep inspired? What's your routine? How does Dr. Brian Kelly keep inspired?
Well, I love reading. So I read prolifically. And in the last 3 years, you know, I got into that woo-woo stuff called meditation. And
nice.
I spent a lot of time doing that. Like, that can be hours a day. Mm-hmm. In fact, on the weekend, I went to a seminar. I went to an Atlas orthogonal seminar. And I was in Australia. I was blown away. You know, I knew a lot of these people who practiced it. So now I'm practicing a little with my brother. I do that a few days a week as well as coaching. And I'm really doing the things that I teach. So I figured I wanted to be a better chiropractor. And how can I be a better chiropractor? And you know those times you adjust someone and it's mm-hmm. like, it's a phenomenal adjustment. You know, time stops and the thing does what you want it to do. And then there's other times and the vertebra moves okay. And you're like, and you think to yourself, that was an okay adjustment. And then there's other times you adjust the spine. It could be the cervical spine. And then you go, I really don't know what happened there, or, you know, it just wasn't clean. Using a mechanical or, you know,
yeah,
the sort of dynamic adjustment, it wasn't clean or clear. You go, you say to yourself, and it might be a minority of times, okay, what the frig happened there, really? If you're being honest.
Yeah.
So I said to myself recently, I go, well, if I'm practicing, I want to be a better chiropractor. And so I went to this AO seminar and I, you know, bought the equipment. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be better at the Atlas than I was a year ago or 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool though. If everyone just said that and made that commitment that every year they're just going to be a little bit better. Like, we don't have to be amazing. Like, it doesn't matter where you start. As long as you just, it's that like compound interest almost, right? It's just that slow, consistent improvement over time, right?
That's exactly. I mean, Brian Tracy's talked about it for 50 years, 1%, 1% in each area. Just, you know, over 5 years, that's noticeable. Over 10 years, that's massive. And it does compound, because then you attract different things and you attract different patients and you're at a higher level and maybe it becomes exponential rather than linear.
Yeah. And then I think you learn things faster as well. Cause once that's the one good thing about chiropractic school, at least, is it gives you all your anatomy basis, it gives you a really good foundation so that when you do learn the other stuff, that's going to be really impactful in your practice, you can learn it faster. Right. So
I think you learn anatomy pretty well at chiropractic school. You learn physiology pretty well. I don't know you learn much else really well. Here's the way we know that. Because you look what people do in practice and you look at those ridiculous board exams and you say, what relevance is that? Or what of the 80% of stuff I learned at chiropractic school, how am I using that now? Okay, it fitted in somewhere in a really small piece and nothing's not unuseful. But if people are being honest, most of it's could be more effective and more targeted.
Mm-hmm. Now, we all know that we are going to be like the people that we hang around with. So through your career, have you been very intentional in who you surround yourself with? And how do you go about that idea of who you're connected with?
Yes and no. Like, mm-hmm. I remember at chiropractic school, I sat in class and there was a person there who was quite funny. And I thought, I want to know that person. And that's what I thought, like, in the first couple of days. And now he's my best friend.
Yeah.
And we chiropractors and we hang out a lot. It is true. Life is the company you keep.
Yeah.
Life is the company you keep. And so I think what's more important is, rather than just seek out the people who you want to be inspired by or hang out with, the people who don't and drag you down in a negative, spend less time with them. It doesn't mean you don't love them any less.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, I choose not to be drawn into that, you know, negative energy every day or once a week or once a month, or, you know, you can still love them and support them. But so I guess it works sort of two ways. But yeah, I've got some friends in and out of chiropractic who, you know, are doing cool things and they're cool to hang out with. And
you want more of it. So that's why you spend more time with them, right? So that should be inspiring. That's cool. All right. Well, in closing, I usually like to give the floor to my guests and see if they have any words of wisdoms or parting words that they'd like to share with all the underdog nation out there that are the chiropractors might feel like an underdog around the world.
Yeah. I don't know if I have any words of wisdom. I honestly think that we're blessed to be in this thing. I know most of your audience is chiropractors. I know some of them aren't, but mm-hmm. we're absolutely blessed to be given this gift called chiropractic, the gift called life and health. And most of us are more healthy than not healthy, you know. And I think to be grateful for the thing we have goes a long, long, long way. And I've lived and worked in several different countries, and there's certainly cultures of the world which remain nameless, and they spend their time complaining about what they haven't got, or they want to have this, you know, bigger house, and, you know, big toys are nice. I love toys. A few months ago, I was on one of my patients. He gave me his yacht for a week, and he's a billionaire. Like, he gave me this super yacht, you know, the crew and the chef. And he was there only 3 hours. He said, "Where do you want to go?" And here I am feeling pretty good, you know. And I'm like, oh, I was pretty grateful for that.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have nice things. And I've got to say, this was pretty nice. But, you know, we've got this gift called life, this gift called chiropractic, and this gift called health. And you don't want to take that for granted. You know, and I think if people ask the question, how could I be a better chiropractor or a better CA or even a better person next week or next year or next month, you know, we'd all be better off because we're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
We're all connected. And the other one, I just in closing, is, you know, that everyone's struggling. Like, I know you struggle with things. I know I struggle with things. I know Brandy struggles with things. And it's like, no one's too proud to reach out and ask for help. And, you know, practice can be lonely and it can be tough, and, you know, you get these situations or events that you may not be seemingly prepared for. It's just like, so call a colleague or reach out to a friend and ask for help. And, you know, cause everyone can offer something, and we're a small tribe and we need to stick together.
Oh, 100%. Well, I just want to thank you because I know you've had a lot of sacrifice and a lot of effort for the chiropractic profession. And I want to show my gratitude for you because what you've done is you've helped to influence thousands of chiropractors around the world, thousands of students, and then the ripple effect is going to be huge. And for our style of chiropractic, we need that. So I just wanted to thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for all the work that you've done.
Thank you, Don. Thanks.
So everybody, this was a very inspiring interview for me. Two of the big things I got out of there was stay connected and create mastery. So I want everybody to get out there and don't forget to crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.